Okay, in beginning this message, I want to give a caution, and that is for those on the tape ministry who may have younger children, there is a portion of this message that would be maybe be well for you to listen to it first before allowing any of your children to hear it. So I'll put that out as a caution to begin with. Now I'd like you to in beginning the message, I'd like to turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Second Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, what should be a familiar verse for most of us. I really like the King James Version better, but since I have New American Standard currently on the podium here, is what I'll read from. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, "Be diligent to present yourselves approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, handling accurately the word of truth." This will be the multiple creations theory under scrutiny, part 3. It is my position regarding the multiple creations theory that some of our brethren, in relation to this particular verse, have not handled the word of truth accurately. Mattering some, and I think we're going to see one of them in this particular message, in one particular case, not only has it not been handled accurately, it's been handled in a very dishonest manner as well. Now, no one can perfectly, I admit to this, no one can perfectly do it, handle God's Word accurately all the time. No one has it perfect. And there are all of us need from time to time adjustments in our doctrine, and I understand that. I'm not expecting total perfection from everyone that I happen to listen to in either a particular setting or on a tape or whatever. We all need adjustments. I realize that I'm constantly adjusting my doctrine because I'm seeking for the perfection of God's truth and I'm seeking to handle God's Word accurately. And the purpose of this series is to provide an adjustment in an area, this particular area, where I believe it's necessary. That's really the intent of this message, though I will be dealing with something that I believe is just plain dishonest in this area as well. In the first two messages of this series, we have demonstrated from the Scriptures that the other races of mankind can be found in neither the word man or in the phrase living creatures used in Genesis 1. In last week's message, we proved that the other races are not represented specifically in or by the term living creatures. But I did admit to you last week that someone may counter and say, okay, living creatures cannot specifically be used to refer to the other races, but who's to say that the other races are not one of the categories which fall under the heading living creatures in Genesis 1 and verse 24. Well, if this is true, as I mentioned at the very end of last week's message, if this is true, if Genesis 1:24 is using the term living creatures as a heading which includes the other races, then the other races must be found in one of the categories listed in Genesis 1 and verse 24. Let's turn there. Genesis 1 and verse 24. Now first we'll see that the heading living creatures is used, and then it describes the three different categories that fall under this heading. Genesis 1 and verse 24, "Then God said, let all the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind, and it was so." In other words, if the other races are to be found as being under the heading living creatures, then they have to be found in either the cattle, the creeping things, or the beast of the earth. And I've only heard one of the three ever used as being the other races of mankind, and that, of course, being the beast of the earth. And if it is used in this manner, it is nearly always used to refer to the Negro race only. Now, there are, I think, occasions where some people use it in referring to all the other races, but the majority of time it's used only, this term beast of the field, is used only in referring to just the Negro race or the Negroes and their sub-races. But keep in mind, for those who use this term in referring to Negroes only, then they need to come up with something else in Genesis 1 that describes the other races, the Oriental races, the Indians and so forth and so on, however you want to divide them up. If this term is only Negroes, for those who want to use it that way, then who are the other? Who or what represents the other races in Genesis 1? We know it's not man already. We know it's not living creatures. If beast, then, is only the Negroes, then that leaves us cattle and creeping things. So you're going to make the Orientals creeping things or cattle, or in these other races. So they've, again, just really as we go through this, we find that there's one problem just right on top of another one with the theories that have been suggested in this area. You know, actually, neither can be biblically be proven to be true. That is, neither the beast of the earth can neither be just the Negro race or all the other races as well. Or let me ask, can either be biblically proven to be true? Well, instead of me just telling you, let's see if we can't discover the answer in this particular message. Now, when listening to those who teach that the beasts of the earth or beasts of the field are another race of mankind, it appears, it really does, at least at first, it appears that they have a watertight case for their position. And it's amazing just how good it sounds. I wish I had time. I'm going to use several quotes, but I wish I could play a whole tape that I took several quotes out of for this message. I wish I could play the whole tape to you prior to your hearing this particular message. Hear the whole tape, and I mean, it sounds good. It sounds like it's a watertight case that no one could ever crack. Until one takes a closer look at the passages used to prove their hypothesis in this area. In this message and in at least the next one to follow, we want to examine every argument, at least every argument at my disposal, used to prove that the beast of the earth or the beast of the field are one or more other races of mankind. And I'm just going to be quoting from one particular source in this message. In the next message, I'll quote from probably a couple, two or three different sources in their arguments that who argue that the beast of the earth or beast of the field are the other races. Now, to begin with, in order to determine who or what the beast of the earth are in Genesis 1 and 2, we must first take a look at the Hebrew word or Hebrew words translated beasts in Genesis 1 and 2. Now, to begin with, it needs to be understood, there's 14 different, if you're using the King James, you need to understand this. If you're using the King James translation, there are 14 different words, Hebrew words, translated beasts in the King James Version. And that can get awfully confusing. There's 14 different, so just when you see beast, it doesn't mean it's always translated from the same word. There's 14 different ones that are used. But there's only two of those 14 that are pertinent in our consideration of Genesis 1 and 2 and other significant passages that we'll be looking at. Matter of fact, these two words, Hebrew words, translated beasts that we're going to take under consideration are the two that are most commonly used. There are 12 others, but these are the two that are almost always used in most cases. Now, before we continue, I want to point out here that what one particular man claims about the Hebrew word translated beast in Genesis 1 and 2. Here's what he claims, taken straight from a tape of his message preached several years ago. Quote, "And then we have the people referred to in the Genesis account where it talks of the beasts of the field, and the people referred to in Jonah and the other dozen or so passages I'm going to read to you tonight." So he's lumping them all together. He says it's the same word beast, both in Genesis and Jonah and in all the other dozen or so passages that he's going to refer to. And we're going to look at all of them. Then he says, and the Hebrew word is chevya. That's C-H-E-V-Y-A-H. And he says the Hebrew word is chevya, a living creature. So he's now made it the living creature as well. Not only beast of the field, but he's tied in living creature to it. A living creature. And that living creature was a biped, two-legged creature. He's not a wild beast. He's not a domestic animal. He's a creation of his own above the animal creation, but separate from Adam kind. End quote. Now that's what he says. That's what he says this Hebrew word in Genesis 1 and 2 is. Or I should say that that's what this word beast is in Genesis 1 and 2 is in the Hebrew. He says it's the Hebrew word chevya or shevya. depending on how you pronounce it. Well, let me tell you, that's simply a lie. Now, I don't know whether it's an intentional lie on his part or he just failed to look up the word, but it's a lie nonetheless. Chevya is number is in Strong's Concordance is number 2423 and is found used only in all of the Old Testament passages. It is only found used as the word beast in the book of Daniel. Number 2423, Chevya, is never once used in Genesis 1 and 2. Now, here are the two Hebrew words that are used in Genesis 1 and 2 that are words translated beasts in the Old Testament. The first one, according to Strong's Concordance, is number 929, Behema. That word is found in Genesis 1 and 2. Here's its definition. From an unused root, probably meaning to be mute, properly a dumb beast, especially any large quadruped or animal, often collectively. Strong's definition. The second word is number 2416 in Strong's Concordance. It's the Hebrew word kehi. From 2421, alive, hence raw, flesh, fresh, plant, water, year, strong, also as a noun, especially in the feminine, singular, and masculine plural, life or living thing, whether literal or figurative. Again, Strong's definition for the word. Now, I want you to pay special attention to those two words. Pay close attention to which of these two words is translated beast in Genesis 1 and 2. Both those words are translated beast in the Old Testament. But I want you to pay close attention to which one of those two words it was that was translated beast in Genesis 1 and 2. Number 929, Behema, is not found translated as beast in the first two chapters of Genesis. It's not the word translated beast. It is the word translated cattle in Genesis 1, 24 through 26, and Genesis 2 and verse 20. It is, however, it's the word translated, it's not beast, it is the word translated cattle, but it is, however, often translated beast in other Old Testament passages. Now that is all very important, so I hope you grab a hold of that. It is not the word translated beast, it's the word translated cattle, yet it is a word translated beast in many other passages. The word translated beast in Genesis 1, 24 through 30, and Genesis 2, 19 through 20, is kehi, number 2416. Now, as we will see, some make no distinction between these words as long as they are translated in the English as beast. But in order to be accurate, students of the Bible, like Paul admonished us to be in the book of Second book of Timothy, in order to be accurate students of the Bible, we must concern ourselves with the right Hebrew word throughout the Old Testament scriptures. Consequently, it is important to note which Hebrew word is translated beast in Genesis 1 and 2. It's not Chevya, and it's not Behema. It is Kehi. And the reason we want to note this is not only for this study, but for a future message in this series, because we want to see what kind of description it is given. This kehi, translated beast in Genesis 1 and 2, we want to see what kind of description it is given in the rest of the Old Testament. Now, but before examining the characteristics of these creatures known as kehi, let's first investigate the passages that are used by some to teach that the beast of the earth or the beast of the field are human beings, specifically non-Caucasian races, or even more specifically, the Negroid race of humankind. Let's now examine the passages that they say, okay, this proves, these passages prove that the beast of the field in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and the beast of the earth in Genesis 1 are other non-white races of humankind, or at least, or only the Negroid race. Let's begin by going to Exodus chapter 9. This is, and we're just going to take them in consecutive order as found in the Old Testament. Exodus chapter 9, we want to begin by reading in this chapter verses 1 through 9. Verse 1, it says, "Then Yahweh said to Moses, Go to Pharaoh and speak to him. Thus says Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and continue to hold them, behold, the hand of Yahweh will come with a very severe pestilence. Now, I'm going to stop here for a minute. I want you to pay very close attention to what's said here. We're going to cover two plagues to begin with, what the plagues are, and what the plagues are say. What Pharaoh is warned that these plagues will bring upon him and whoever or whatever else. Listen carefully. Verse 3 again. Behold, the hand of Yahweh will come with a very severe pestilence on your livestock which are in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds and the flocks. But Yahweh will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel. By the way, if you've got King James, where I've read livestock, it's the word beast. That's why they use this passage. New American Standard translated it livestock. I wish I would have read it to you in King James. But anyway, where I've got livestock, it should be beast. Verse 4 again. But Yahweh will make a distinction between the livestock or beast of Israel and the beast of Egypt, so that nothing will die of all that belongs to the sons of Israel. And Yahweh set a definite time, saying, tomorrow Yahweh will do this thing in the land. So Yahweh did this thing on the morrow, and all the beasts of Egypt died. But the beast of the sons of Israel, not one died. And Pharaoh sent, and behold, there was not even one of the livestock of Israel dead, but the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people go. Then Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of soot from a kiln. We're beginning to talk about a new plague. And let Moses throw it toward the sky in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust over all the land of Egypt, and will become boils breaking out with sores on man and beast through all the land of Egypt. Okay, now, I don't know about you, but somebody caught something that seemed a little bit odd in those two plagues. Here's how the argument goes. It goes something like this. In verse 6, we are told that all the livestock of Egypt died. They all died. Okay? And I may be incorrect. Somebody have King James? Was where I read livestock, did they use the word beast?
That's verse 6.
Verse 6.
And the Lord did that thing on the morrow, and all the cattle of Egypt died, but of the cattle of the children of Israel died not one.
Okay, excuse me. That word is cattle there. Not where I've read livestock or beast in that passage, except for the last time, it's in the King James, it's cattle. I was wrong on that. Anyway, in verse 6, we are told that all the livestock, according to the New American Standard, or cattle according to the King James Version, that all the livestock in Egypt died, specifically horses, donkeys, camels, herds, and flocks. It says they all died. Then in verse 9, we find boils as a result of the next plague breaking out on both man and beast. Beast, obviously then, cannot be animals because all the animals of Egypt were killed. Consequently, a destruction between animals and beast have been made. Thus, beast must be something other than animals. And that's how their argument goes. And, at first glance, it sounds pretty logical. It sounds like that has to be the case according to this passage. But will it stand up under further investigation? First, let's note that the word beast in this passage is not translated from number 2416 Kehi. It's not translated from number 2416 Kehi, nor from number 2423 Chevya. Remember, he's already stated, this particular man has already stated once before, that Chevya was the Hebrew word used throughout all of these passages. In relation to these verses, he says, quote, now if you come down the chapter and come to verse 19, you'll read these words, quote within a quote, send therefore now and gather the cattle. Then he says, that's B-E-H-E-M-A, the behema, the domesticated ones. Okay, that's the cattle or the word livestock in the New American Standard Version. And then he a little bit later picks up with the verse a little bit further on. He says, for every man and beast. And then he says, Chevya, living creature. End of quote, within a quote, and end of quote. So he says that the word cattle or livestock in this passage is behemoth, number 929, and that the word beast that's used in the last two verses is chevya, number 2423. Two lies. He's lied again. He's lied twice in this case. The word cattle is not, in this passage, is not translated, as he said, from number 9, is not translated from behemoth, number 929. But in this case, cattle is translated from number 4735, a whole new word, miknah. Here's its definition according to Strong's. It's from 7069, something bought, that is property, but only livestock, abstractly acquisition. Strong's definition. So he says it's behemoth. All you have to do is get Strong's concordance out. Look up the word, look at its corresponding Hebrew number, and look the number up in the Hebrew concordance. It's not number 929 behemoth at all, like he said. It's number 4735. It's the Hebrew word miknah. Now, and then here's the second lie. He said that the word beast in both verse 19 and verses 9 and 10 is not translated from number, or excuse me, he said it is translated from number 2423, chevya. It's not translated from chevya at all. Instead, it's translated from number 929, behemoth. He said behemoth was the word cattle. No, behemoth, in this case, is translated beast. Not only did the speaker once again lie, but as a result of now discovering the true Hebrew word translated beast in Hebrew 9, behemoth rather than kehi, we can see from the very start that this particular passage can prove nothing about the beast of the earth in Genesis 1:24. Now, I know that may have been somewhat complicated. But the point is that the word beast in this passage is translated from the wrong Hebrew word to prove anything about the beasts in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. They were translated from the Hebrew word kehi. This beast is translated from the Hebrew word behemoth. Two totally separate type of creatures. Now, this speaker says that behemoth was somewhere else, and he says this is not behemoth. Well, again, all he had to do was look up the word, and it's very clear that this is behemoth, and it has nothing to do with the beast of the earth or the beast of the field in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. But let me point this out. Even if kehi had been the Hebrew word used in this passage, it still would have been an impotent argument anyway. Here's why. Because we find still later, at the time of the next plague, the one after the plague of boils, the last one we read about in the passage, after that plague, when it's describing the next plague in Egypt, we find that livestock are still alive in Egypt. They said, well, all the livestock or cattle were killed, and then we find beasts later, and so they can't be the same thing because they were all killed. But even as we're going to read, in the next plague, we still find livestock, and it describes what the livestock are. Exodus 9. Now we want to look at Exodus 9, and this time at verses 18 through 25. Now, before we look at these, before I read these verses to you, I want you to note, I want you to look for this in these verses as I read them. First, I want you to note that the word livestock, as from the New American Standard Version, in these passages is the exact same Hebrew word, number 4735, miknah, used in verses 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4 said all these livestock had been killed. And yet here's the exact same word being used again in the next, in two plagues further on. Secondly, I want you to note how beasts, the word beast and livestock, are used interchangeably in these next verses. Exodus 9, starting with verse 18 through 25. It says, "Behold, about this time tomorrow I will send a very heavy hail, such as has not been seen in Egypt from the day it was founded until now." Verse 19, notice what it says. "Now therefore send, bring your livestock," same word, 4735, miknah, which were all supposed to have already been killed. He says, "Now therefore send, bring your livestock and whatever you have in the field to safety, every man and beast that is found in the field." In other words, he's used livestock and beast. Beast again, number 929, behemoth, which would be livestock. interchangeably. It says, "And every man and beast that is not found in the field and is not brought home, when the hail comes down on them, will die." Going on. "Then one among the servants of Pharaoh," "the one among the servants of Pharaoh who feared the word of Yahweh made his servants and his livestock flee into the houses. But he who paid no regard to the word of Yahweh left his servants and his livestock in the field. Now Yahweh said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand toward the sky, and the hail may fall on the land of Egypt, on man and beast," the livestock that they had left out in the field, "and on every plant of the field throughout the land of Egypt.' And Moses stretched out his staff toward the sky, and Yahweh sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down to the earth. And Yahweh rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire, flashing continually in the midst of the hail, very severe, such as had not been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail struck all that was in the field through all the land of Egypt, both man and beast. The hail also struck every plant of the field and shattered every tree of the field." Very clearly, we can see that livestock are yet still alive, even though it says they were all killed beforehand. That livestock and beast in these passages are just simply used interchangeably. As a result, we would have to conclude that the word "all" in verse 6 is conditional, that all the livestock were killed. It has to be understood conditionally, because we still, in the next several plagues, find livestock still alive. Now, if you want to make sense of that, it seems to be almost a dichotomy the way that takes place, but if you want to make sense of it, just grab the book of Jasher. Again, remember that book of Jasher is mentioned twice in the Old Testament, so it's been given some kind of authority or recognition by the Old Testament, though not necessarily inspired, though it may be and just has been lost. But I'm not going to. I don't say that it is. But nonetheless, it's been given some authority. And as often is the case, Jasher often fills in the blank spaces that are left out in the book of Genesis. Here is what the book of Jasher has to say about this particular case, where all the livestock, quote unquote, all the livestock, were supposedly all put to death, so that there were no longer any livestock in Egypt except for the Israelites. Here's what it says. This is Jasher chapter 80, and this will be verses 24 through 26. It says, "And God sent the pestilence, and the pestilence pervaded Egypt in the horses and asses and in the camels, in the herds of oxen and sheep and in man. And when the Egyptians rose up early in the morning to take their cattle to pasture, they found all their cattle dead." And the word "cattle" there includes, is being used to mean horses, asses, camels, and herds of oxen and sheep. Okay. And again, so it's repeating. It's just the same play. And again, it repeats what's found in Genesis, or Exodus chapter 9 and verse 6. It says, "And when the Egyptians arose up early in the morning to take their cattle to pasture, they found all their cattle dead." Well, how in the world does that make sense of Exodus 9 and verse 6 and what follows? Well, let's read the next verse. Verse 26 of Jasher 80. "And there remained of the cattle of the Egyptians only 1 in 10. And of the cattle belonging to Israel in Goshen, not one died." So it further explains. It says it uses the word "all" again. All the cattle or all the livestock were killed. But then it explains, meaning that there only remained 1 in 10 after the plague was finished. And so there were still livestock available for the other plagues to be visited upon. Consequently, absolutely no argument is found in this passage, even if beast had been translated from kehi, the right Hebrew word, there is no argument to be made from this passage to substantiate a differentiation between animals and beasts. Just will not work. Okay, let's go to our next passage. This will be Exodus chapter 11, or the next passage, or quote-unquote proof text, used to try to prove that beasts in Genesis 1 and 2 are other races of mankind. Exodus 11, I'll read verses 5 and 6. It says, "And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of the Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the millstone." Excuse me, I want to read this in the King James Version. Okay, this will be Exodus 11, 5 and 6 again, but this time I want to read it from the King James. Verse 5, "And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of beasts, And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there was none like it, nor shall be like it any more. Now here's some of what our previous speaker has to say about this particular verse regarding the word beast as used or found in the King James Version. Here's what he says, quote, "Who were these living creatures, these beasts?" Later he then says, God was not running around slaying the firstborn sheep, the firstborn goats, the firstborn cow, the firstborn cat, dog, or any other kind of animal. God was slaying the firstborn in every Egyptian household, and in the household of the servants, the slaves, the living creatures, these people of another race, of another kind. If he had wanted to refer to domesticated cattle suffering an affliction, this scripture would have recorded it as behemoth, but it most certainly does not. End quote. You know, this guy, and I don't know if anybody that's ever taken him to task previous to this, being as far as I know, this tape is still being passed out throughout the land. But by the testimony of his own mouth, he destroys his position. Because behemoth is, number 929, is exactly the word translated beast in this passage. And he emphatically says it's not. And he points out if it was, then we'd know it was domesticated animals. So by his own mouth, he's proven, because it is behemoth, check it out, it's so easy to determine that it is behemoth, not Chevy or Kehi. It's so easy to determine, and by his own mouth he says, hey, the beast here in this passage have to be domesticated animals. Because had God wanted to infer that, he would have used behemoth. And of course, that is exactly what God used. Why this man chose to be dishonest with these words is beyond me. But it is time, I believe, that the error is exposed. And I pray that when he receives these sets of tapes, that he will repent of what he's done and put out a message that shows that he was in total error on every passage he used in that particular message. Okay, that takes care of that passage. Let's now go to the next passage. This will be Exodus 19. Exodus 19 and verses 12 through 13. Verse 12, it says, "And you shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, beware that you do not go up on the mountain nor touch the border of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death." Verse 13, "No hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the ram's horn sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain." Here's the argument. In this passage, it is seen that beasts are attributed as having hands. So it is concluded by some that these creatures, these beasts, must be human. You know, if they wanted, if it was, well, let me just give you the argument here. I guess I'll come to it in a minute. But that's basically the argument. But as we will see, this conclusion is drawn much too hastily. First, and once again, we find that the word beast in this passage is translated from number 929 behemoth rather than number 2416 kehi, which would be necessary if comparison can be made between beast in this passage and the beast of the earth in Genesis 1:24. If you're going to compare and say this is a description of those beasts, they have to be translated from the same word, and they are not. It is translated from the Hebrew word behemoth. But once again, even if Kehi had been the Hebrew word used in this passage, it still would make no difference. It's not, so that already takes care of it. But even if it had been Kehi, it'd still make no difference. Why? Because the study of the Hebrew word yad, number 3027, translated hand in verse 13 of this passage, we find if we study that word, we find that it is the same word that is used or could be translated paw in other passages. Now, before looking at those passages, let me go back to our speaker again, and here's what he had to say regarding these hands in this passage. Here's what he said, quote, "It didn't say paws. The word is hands. It's a different word for the paw and hooves of animals in your Bible," end quote. Oh, is that so? Lies again. That's not true at all. Let's turn now to 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now, if in my voice I sound like I'm a little bit disgusted with this fella, I am. You know, for anyone to have stated emphatically what he has stated over and over again in this passage, it's just, and especially as a leader of our people, that it's just a little bit disgusting for him to have not done his homework or to have blatantly lied, if that's indeed what he did. Either way, it's disgusting. And so I am a little bit disgusted over what this man has perpetrated through this tape. Again, that's been passed all over this country. Okay. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 37. Listen closely to what is said here. It says, "And David said, Yahweh who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, Go and may Yahweh be with you." The word hand, he says, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. The word hand there is the exact same Hebrew word. Number 3027, the Hebrew word yod. So what? Well, guess what? It's number 3027 that's also translated twice in this verse as paw. The paw of the bear and the paw of the lion. It's the same word. In other words, the Hebrew word yah could mean hand or it could mean paw. And it's used both three times in this passage, once referring to the hand of man and twice referring to the paws of animals. And yet this speaker said that it's a whole total different word that's used for the paw or the hooves of animals. Indeed, it is not. Here's another, let's look at another one just to further verify it. Turn to Psalms, the 22nd chapter. Psalms 22 and verses 20 and 21. It says, "Deliver my soul from the sword, my only life from the power of the dog." New American Standard has a footnote with the word power, and it goes, you go over and it says literally paw. Again, number 3067, the Hebrew word yod. It says, "Deliver my soul from the sword, my only life from the yod or paw or power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth or from the horns of the wild oxen, thou dost answer me." Again, we find the word yod being referenced to and part of an anatomy of the dog, the same way that the lion's mouth and the horns of a wild oxen was used. One more. Go to Daniel chapter 6. Or just listen to it as I read it to you here. Daniel 6 and verse 27. Here it says, "He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power," footnote, "hand," or we know it now, it could be paw, and I don't know why they put hand over there. It'd been a whole lot, it seems like it would be a whole lot more intelligent put in the footnote, put paw, because it says, "who has delivered Daniel from the power," or the yod, or the paw of what? What do you think it's talking about? What was he delivered from? The lions. Of the lions. The paw of the lions. But clearly, as a result, it is evident that the word yod, translated hand in Exodus 19, is attributed to both man and animal alike. In these cases, specifically lions, bears, and dogs. And sometimes it's the same word translated paw and hand for man and animal in the very same verse. Now here is our speaker. Listen to our speaker again regarding this. He says, "Now, you don't really believe that Moses was saying to the four-footed animals in the camp of Israel, their cattle, their sheep, their goats, Moses didn't really say to them, make sure you don't put your paws on the mountain or you're going to be stoned or shot through," end quote. Well, let's turn to Exodus 34, verses 1 through 3. Do I really believe that's what Moses or God had told Moses? That Moses relayed to the people? Yes, it is. Here's the reason why. First of all, because nothing can be proven by the Hebrew word yod or the English word hand, but also because of what we find in Exodus 34, verses 1 through 3, which is the account of Moses' second trip up the mountain after he had broken the stone tablets which contained the Ten Commandments. Listen, Exodus 34. Basically the same thing is happening over again. It says, "Now Yahweh said to Moses, cut out for yourselves two stone tablets like the former ones, and I will write on the tablets the words that were on the former tablets which you shattered. So So be ready by morning and come up in the morning to Mount Sinai and present yourself there to me on the top of the mountain. And no man, here's the injunction again, stated a little bit differently, but it says, and no man is to come up with you, nor let any man be seen anywhere on the mountain. In other words, don't touch it. Even the flocks and the herds may not graze in front of that mountain. God made it even clearer. He says, not only are they not to touch their paws to the mountains, hand if it's a man, paw if it's an animal, but he says, don't even let them graze near the mountain. Very clearly, flocks and herds are here identified, or cattle, sheep, and goats, or behemoth, which is the word that is translated beast in this passage, or in the earlier passage in Exodus. Consequently, neither can Exodus 19, verses 12 through 13, be used to support the theory that beasts are something other than four-footed animals. In the very beginning, it's the wrong Hebrew word, so that takes care of it right from the start. Next passage, next proof text used. Turn to Leviticus 18. Leviticus 18:23 to begin with, and then we're going to jump over to chapter 20. Leviticus 18 in verse 23, it says, also you shall not have intercourse with any animal to be defiled with it, nor shall any woman stand before an animal to mate with it. It is a perversion. And jump over to chapter 20, verses 15 and 16. It says, if there is a man who lies with an animal, he shall surely be put to death. You shall also kill the animal. And if there is a woman who approaches any animal to mate with it, you shall kill the woman and the animal. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood guiltiness is upon them. Again, I meant to read that in the King James Version, because where the New American Standard translates animal, it's the word beast in the King James Version. Now, if you read the New American Standard, there can be no question what is being discussed here. But with the word beast under consideration or under question, then some raise or point this out. They say that we have, here in this passage, we have humans, man, successfully mating with beasts. And then both man and beast being held responsible for the act. As a result, the conclusion is drawn then that the beast must be human, and that we here instead have an injunction against interracial marriage. That's what's purported, or that's what's said. Now, there are three problems with that conclusion about this passage. First, the same problem is encountered in trying to use these two passages to prove that the beasts of the earth are humans, specifically other races of mankind, specifically the Negroes, as has been encountered previously, and that is that we again find the use of number 929, behemoth, as the Hebrew word translated beast, rather than number 2416, kehi, the Hebrew word used in Genesis 1 and 24 in the translation of the beasts of the earth. Same problem all over again. This passage can't prove anything about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 because it's the wrong Hebrew word. But once again, it wouldn't make any difference even if kehi had been the word used in these two passages. In their argument, it is implied that the word beast here, or that these beasts, are able to mate with humans successfully. Now keep in mind that offspring from this union is not even hinted at in these two different passages. So that couldn't be what's meant when they say successful mating. That's not what's implied. Instead, the perpetrators of this argument seem to be suggesting that successful copulation is not possible between man and animal. That's what they seem to be implying when they talk about successful mating here. Here's what this speaker again had to say in this regard. He said, quote, now I know that churches expect you to believe that that's referring to some sort of abominable wickedness between humankind and animals. I don't believe that for a moment. I believe it's describing what the Bible rightly calls adultery, end quote. And then he goes on in the next sentence or two to describe that adultery here would be referring to interracial marriage. So he's saying, I don't even believe that that's possible. You know, it's hard for me to believe that preacher can be that naive, to be so naive to actually think that these perverse sexual acts still don't happen or don't happen at all. You know, what's known as bestiality still happens even in modern times. And catch what it's called. It's called bestiality. Again, the ones who want to take this other argument is saying that the beast are other humankind. But bestiality today, well, let me give you the definitions. Here's Webster's 1828 definition of bestiality. The second definition is unnatural connection with a beast. Well, this man may come back and say, well, a beast is a non-Caucasian race of people. Well, then, so what I did is I looked up the word beast according to Strong's Concordance, so there can be no doubt what he means when he talks about an unnatural connection with a beast. Beast, his number one definition is any four-footed animal, and his number two definition is that which is opposed to man. So there's no question. When he talks about unnatural connection with a beast, he's talking about unnatural connection with animals. Here's Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, 1975. Bestiality, third definition, sexual relations between a human being and a lower animal. It couldn't be any clearer. William Bradford, governor of Plymouth Colony, records what's called a horrible case of bestiality in 1642. Upon investigation of this particular case and conviction before a jury, the following is recorded. Quote, a very sad spectacle it was, for first the mare and then the cow and then the rest of the lesser cattle were killed before his face, according to the law, Leviticus 20:15. And then he himself was executed, end quote. Now note how our forefathers interpreted these passages. They saw them exactly for what they were saying, as bestiality, as unnatural connection between mankind and animal kind. Now also keep in mind that if these passages are not denouncing these gross acts of perversion, then we have no biblical injunction against this abhorrent conduct. If that's not there, and don't tell me that God didn't deal with it when it happens. You know, I think of all things, that is the most abhorrent of all. The most perverse kind of sexual activity beyond even homosexuality in my mind. And you're going to tell me God deals with every other sexual perversion, homosexuality, incest, all of them, and He's not going to deal with that one? You know, if this isn't dealing with it, if these passages are not dealing with that perversion, then they're not dealt with in the Bible. But clearly, these passages are referring to just that, intercourse with animals and not interracial relationships, which the New American Standard, again, makes very clear in the fact that it translates this word animal instead of beast so that there can be absolutely no reason to believe otherwise. Also, there is also no reason for us to conclude that beasts are human here because they were held morally responsible for these acts of immorality. That's the other part of their argument, is that, hey, you know, only man should be held responsible, not the poor beast, not these poor innocent victims in the situation. But that does not hold water because there are other scriptures wherein animals are held responsible for other acts of sinful behavior. Turn to Exodus real quickly. Exodus 21. Here we find a case. Exodus 21 and verse 28. It says, and if an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall surely be stoned and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall go unpunished. Well, why shouldn't the owner be punished? You know, it's his ox. It's he who had the ox out there where somebody might be stoned where somebody might be gored. No, the ox was to be put to death. And if the ox wasn't put to death and he continued to do it, then the owner was to be put to death for not having put to death the ox that was known for goring. But here is a case, perfect example of where an animal was held responsible for sinful behavior. And it may be that in this particular case that these animals would have an inclination toward that kind of activity. I don't know, but for whatever reason, God said put those animals to death. And it's interesting that in William Bradford's case, wherein this actually had taken place in that colony, not only was the man put to death, but the animals were put to death, all in harmony, they themselves said, in harmony with Leviticus and this injunction against bestiality. Now, I can't remember a little detail there, but I can't remember if I dealt with the fact that this word beast again is the wrong word. I think I did. It's again translated from the wrong word. Let's go to the next one. This will be Numbers chapter 31. Numbers 31, and I want to look at this one in the King James. So if you don't have King James, just listen. Numbers 31 and verse 47. Here's what it says. Even the children of Israel's half, Moses took one portion of 50, both of man and of beast, and gave them unto the Levites, which kept the charge of the tabernacle of Yahweh, as Yahweh commanded Moses. Okay, we find the word beast again used. Here's the speaker that we've been quoting. This is his argument. He says, quote, "But what about the beasts? These beasts, of course, the word is again chevya, is not domesticated or wild animals," end quote. Another lie. The word translated beast in this verse is not chevya. It's number 929, once again, behema. He goes on. He also says, quote, "But even assuming it were," because if you read right down the chapter, you will find in the previous verses that they already listed the spoils of cattle, the spoils of asses, the spoils of sheep. And then it talks of the spoils of man, and then it talks of the spoils of beasts, end quote. Now, let's just do what he says. He says, well, if you read down, you'll see, hey, there's a spoil this, spoil this, spoil this, spoil this, all these animals, then man, and then beast is listed separately. And he says, you can just read it for yourself. Well, let's do what he suggests. Let's just go up further, higher in the chapter, and let's read it for ourselves. Now, again, New American Standard certainly clarifies this situation by its translation, and I'm going to read now from up above from it. Let's go to Numbers. In Numbers 31, let's begin with verse 25. It says, "Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying," now this is, by the way, this is dealing with the slaughter of Midian, and they're dividing up the booty of what they were able to capture as a result. Verse 25, "Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, You and Eleazar the priest and the heads of the father's household of the congregation, take account of the booty that was captured, both man and an animal," or beast, according to the King James Version. Now, I think I'll just throw in beast where New American Standard has animal. And then it goes on, "And divide the booty between the warriors who went out to battle and all the congregation, and levy a tax for Yahweh from the men of war who went out to battle, 1 in 500 of the persons, and of the cattle, and of the donkeys, and of the sheep, take it from their half, and give it to Eleazar the priest as an offering to Yahweh." Now note, everything, according to these verses, everything was to be numbered, and then parceled out. They had to be numbered first, and then they were parceled out according to how God said it was to be done. So if beast, used in this whole passage, is listed as another category of beings, rather than a heading for animals, like we saw living creatures used in our last message, if it's used as another category of different kind of being, then they also would have to be numbered along with the cattle and the sheep and the asses and the men. But let's see what happens. Let's go on. Numbers 31, let's pick it up now with verse 31. Verse 31. It says, "And Moses and Eleazar the priest did just as Yahweh had commanded Moses. Now the booty that remained from the spoil, which the men of war had plundered, was 675,000 sheep, and 72,000 cattle, and 61,000 donkeys, and of human beings, of the women who had not known man intimately, all the persons were 32,000. And the half, the portion of those who went out to war, was as follows. The number of the sheep was 337,500. And Yahweh's levy of the sheep was 675, and the cattle were 36,000, and from which Yahweh's levy was 72, and the donkeys were 30,500, from which Yahweh's levy was 61, and the human beings were 16,000, from whom Yahweh's levy was 32 persons. And Moses gave the levy, which was Yahweh's offering, to Eleazar the priest, just as Yahweh had commanded Moses. As for the sons of Israel's half, which Moses separated from the men who had gone to war, now the congregation's half was 337,500 sheep, and 36,000 cattle, and 30,500 donkeys, and the human beings were 16,000. Verse 40, or let's stop with verse 46. So, what do we notice here? That beasts are conspicuously missing in the number. But if they were another listed category, they would have to be numbered just like everything else was. Why were they missing? Well, because the word beast is translated from the Hebrew word behema, which would be a heading for the cattle and asses and sheep. That's all it was. Verse 47, listen to what it says. It says, and from the sons of Israel's half, Moses took one drawn out of every 50. This is a summation, by the way. Both of man and of beast, King James, and gave them to the Levites who gave charge of the tabernacle of Yahweh just as Yahweh had commanded Moses. Note in verse 47 that this is a summation, that it is a repeat of what was said before, and it's not only naming the animals again, the sheep, the cattle, and the donkeys, by calling them beasts or animals according to the New American Standard, but it also, again, repeats animals. Why? Because it's simply a summation of all that was said before. And so, once again, nothing can be proven by this passage, even if the Hebrew word here was kehi and not behemoth. Let's go to quickly to one more passage before we conclude today's message. Let's go to the book of Judges in chapter 20. Judges 20 and verse 48, where it says, the men of Israel then turned back against the sons of Benjamin and struck them with the edge of the sword, both the entire city and with the New American Standard has cattle, King James, beasts, and all that they found. They also set on fire all the cities which they found. Here's our speaker's argument for this passage. Quote, Samuel had to reprimand Saul because he didn't slay all the cattle and the sheep and the goats, speaking of a previous, at another time. Isn't that right? But here, later he says, but here, this particular passage, here it is not talking about slaying animals. It's saying the man would be slain together with the living creatures, the colored, black, or Negro servants. End quote. Now, remember that the same speaker identified behemoth as quadruped animals at an earlier time. And guess what? Rather than kehi or chevya, the word beast in this passage is again translated from the Hebrew word behemoth. So by the testimony of his own mouth, this passage identifies animals that are going to be slain just as in the case of Saul and not Negroes, very clearly. His argument just will not stand. We'll pick this up. We haven't covered all these arguments or the ones to yet come from a different perspective. But so far, we can see very clearly that in every case that we've looked at thus far as we've gone through the Old Testament, that proponents of this argument that beasts of the earth in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 are the other races or the Negro race, we've seen every passage that is used uses the wrong Hebrew word, the Hebrew word behemoth, or the wrong Hebrew word to prove anything about the beast of the earth or the beast of the field in Genesis 1 and 2. There it's kehi. In these passages, in every one of these passages, it has been behemoth. You know, let me warn you. I've said that this man has lied. One way or the other, intentional or non-intentional, he's lied. I've told you that at least, but you don't know whether he's lied or whether I've lied for you today. Let this be a good lesson. You don't know whether you can trust me or not. Sure, you're my congregation. Sure, you think I've never led you astray before, and I'm sure the people who listen to him felt the same way. And so don't trust your preacher. Get out there and check it out yourself. You check these passages out. You go to Strong's Concordance and you find out what the number is and what the Hebrew word is, because one of us is lying, and right now you don't know who. So, it's on your shoulders. We'll pick it up with the rest of these arguments in the next message. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer.